Good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar here on Eagle FM. I'm your host Ndafa, Happy Juju. It's Tuesday and the rhythm of the week is already in full swing. For some, it's the day where plans begin to take shape. For others, it's already a sprint to meet the deadlines ahead. Now, whether you're navigating the buzz of Katutura, powering through meetings in Ongwediva, or enjoying a quiet moment in Rhoodridge, we're grateful to be part of your day. Here on The Radar, we cut through the noise to bring clarity to the issues that matter. We interrogate the policies, unpack the impact, and amplify the voices that often go unheard. Now, from the corridors of power to the corners of communities, we ask who is being held accountable, who is being empowered, and who is being left behind. What's shifting in the public sector? Are local councils delivering on their mandates? How are national priorities showing up in people's daily lives? And what's next for Namibia as it navigates the crossroads of economic promise and political pressure? You can catch us live via the Eagle FM app and website and keep the conversation going on Instagram, Facebook and LinkedIn and our WhatsApp channel. Now, whether you're tuned in from your office, your car or your couch, thank you for making us part of your Tuesday. This is On The Radar, where Namibia's headlines meet Namibia's people. Let's get into today's conversation. The first consultative dialogue for Commonwealth Youth Ecosystem Stakeholders 2025 marks a significant milestone in shaping the future of youth leadership and development across the 56 member states of the Commonwealth. This inaugural dialogue brings together a broad spectrum of actors within the youth ecosystem, ranging from government agencies, civil society organizations, youth-led initiatives, private sector representation, international development partners, and academic institutions. The dialogue arises from the growing recognition that youth are not only beneficiaries, but essential architects of sustainable development. However, despite being a demographic majority in many Commonwealth nations, young people often face structural and institutional barriers that limit their participation in governance, policymaking, and innovation space. As the Commonwealth continues to prioritize inclusive development, climate resilience, digital innovation, and social equity, there's an urgent need to reimagine how youth leadership is supported, nurtured, and embedded across systems and sectors. Let's now take a listen at Nicholas Tembwe, who is the Director of Youth Development in the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts, and Culture, as he speaks at the Commonwealth being held in Windhoek yesterday.
And welcome to Windhoek for the first. On behalf of the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, and more specifically the Department of Youth, Sport and National Service, allow me to extend our deepest appreciation to all our esteemed guests for your presence and commitment to the ideals of youth empowerment, inclusive governance, and multilateral cooperation. This gathering brings together youth delegates, government officials, civil society actors, development partners, and private sector representatives from across the Commonwealth, and marks a pivotal moment for the Commonwealth Youth Council convenes this dialogue under the timely theme Reimagining Youth Leadership, Strengthening Systems for Sustainable Impact. This dialogue serves as a strategic platform to reflect, recalibrate, and reposition the CYC to a more effective champion, to more effectively champion the voices and aspirations of the 1.5 billion young people across the Commonwealth. Namibia is deeply honored to host this inaugural dialogue. Our country's unwavering commitment to youth development agendas is well documented. And we are proud to have made meaningful contributions to continental and global youth structures, including the election of a Namibian youth to the Commonwealth Youth Council and the Pan-Africa Youth Union. Director of Ceremonies, we are confident that this dialogue will produce tangible outcomes, including a roadmap for institutional reforms, a draft strategic plan, and institutional partnerships that will drive sustainable impact across youth development sectors. Distinguished guests, we trust that the deliberations among young people over the coming 4 days or so will be fruitful, and that Namibia's hospitality will provide a conducive environment for the meaningful exchange of ideas, collaboration, networking, and innovation. Once again, I warmly welcome you all and wish you a successful and impactful dialogue.
The dialogue taking place, that is the Commonwealth Youth Council Consultative Dialogue, taking place in the Namibian capital city of Windhoek, marks a significant milestone in efforts to shape a future where young people are central to policy, innovation, and sustainable development across the Commonwealth. Also speaking at the opening ceremony yesterday is Namibia's Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, Sanet Steenkamp, where she highlighted the country's commitment to youth empowerment and its active role within the Commonwealth. This dialogue, I'm going to quote, represents the Commonwealth's commitment to investing in its greatest resource, its young people. She said, "We are united by a singular purpose to shape a future that centers youth, their voices, their leadership, and their dreams." She further said, "Our young people represent strength, talent, creativity, and resilience." Namibia's initiatives include the National Youth Policy from 2020 to 2030, and the recently launched 6th National Development Plan were cited as foundational tools for creating measurable change and inclusive development for the youth. Now, the 2025 Consultative Dialogue responds to several key imperatives, including youth inclusion and representation. Although young people are central to driving change, their involvement in formal decision-making processes often remains symbolic or marginal. The dialogue explores how systems can better institutionalize youth voices in national and Commonwealth agendas. System strengthening, now beyond programs, interventions, there is a need to build robust and sustainable frameworks that support youth leadership across sectors such as education and employment, health, climate action, digital economies, and governance. Collaborative ecosystem building. The dialogue also fosters collaboration across stakeholders, ensuring that young development is not silenced, but treated as a cross-cutting issue that requires integration, partnerships across sectors of financing and policy cohesion. Actionable commitments, the dialogue will not only surface challenges, but also push for concrete outcomes, including policy recommendations, strategic partnerships, funding mechanisms, and frameworks for monitoring youth impact. Now, some of the key areas that the dialogue is looking at is innovative youth leadership models, climate justice and intergregational solidarity, digital transformation and skills development, mental health and well-being in youth programming, youth in peace building and democratic governance, as well as resource mobilization for youth-led actions. Speaking at the event is Chairperson of the Commonwealth Youth Council, Joshua Ope, who spoke about the challenges that they have been facing and also some recommendations to those challenges. Let's take a listen to Joshua Ope.
And welcome to Windhoek for the first consultative dialogue for Commonwealth Youth Ecosystem stakeholders. It has been 10 months since we last met at this level, and that was in Samoa at the Commonwealth Youth Forum, where together with my fellow executives, we were sworn in. In that short time, through your support, like the incredible support that we've seen, we have successfully led grassroots projects, including rallying over 300 young people to lead artificial intelligence workshops in their countries, reaching more than 5,000 young people, and making sure that they are able to get to know more about artificial intelligence and how they can leverage all the potentials that AI brings. We've hosted global events such as convening conversations at the ECOSOC Youth Forum on making the digital boom work for young people, where we had ministers of state and development partners present. And we've also launched the Commonwealth Leadership Series, which we launched in London in March, on the size of the Commonwealth Young Leaders Summit at the London School of Economics. This has all been through your support. We have reinforced the CYC's digital footprint by launching or getting an address on the World Wide Web, which was through getting a new website for the CYC, and it was launched by the then Secretary General, Right Honorable Patricia Scotland. While we have enjoyed reasonably successful tenure, marked by numerous incredible achievements, several challenges persist. The lack of institutional support for the CYC's work significantly hinders our operations. The absence of dedicated support in good ideas remaining unrealized, executives often constrained and forced to shelve the most ambitious pursuits in the interests of our constituents, and a growing apathy towards the CYC. For example, although we are supposed to have an office in London, none of my executives have the right and the support to work in London. They don't even have the necessary approvals. We have a space, but we do not even have the right to access that space. Amid rapidly changing dynamics, which continue to worsen the challenges young people face, and in the face of growing concern for the future of young people globally, from rising unemployment rates, mental health issues, the climate crisis among others, you will agree with me that this should instead be a time where we increase resource allocation to youth-led organizations like the CYC to put at the fore young people at driving change. Furthermore, our national youth councils and youth delegates face their unique challenges. Imagine if every national youth delegate had a dedicated budget line from their government to effectively support the implementation of programmatic action of the CYC and the Commonwealth at the national and local levels. With these systems in place, our impact would have significantly increased. We would have shifted from merely responding to crisis to actively preventing them, from proposing projects to successfully implementing them, and also ensuring that members or young people at the grassroots levels have access to global youth development programming, which is our Commonwealth advantage. That is why we are convening this particular engagement. And you might have already realized the solemn nature of the conversation I'm having with you, because it is very dear to us. Whilst this is supposed to be a fanciful jamboree, we see this as a turning point for youth development globally. And that's why I'm calling on every member state and stakeholder present here to view this dialogue as more than just a talking shop or a mere conference. See it as a pivotal moment. Commit before we all leave here to establish or legally strengthen our national youth councils, as included in the declaration from the last youth ministers meeting held in London in 2023. Allocate transparent budget lines for our national youth delegates to make sure that we are able to function and extend these programmatic actions at all levels, because the Commonwealth Youth Council exists and was created to support in delivering youth development agenda at the most basic level, and that's the grassroots level, and that is what we want to do. We look forward to a renewed commitment to collectively provide the critical resources needed for the optimal functioning of the CYC and other youth networks and youth structures such as at the national, regional, and pan-commonwealth levels. Let's recall the vision we set out in Sri Lanka to develop a commonwealth where every young person has a role seat at the table, not just for the sake of balancing the average age at the decision-making table, but to have an opportunity to tap into the endless potential of young people, which is only possible through meaningfully engaging young people. This was the fundamental reason why in 2013, heads of government endorsed the CYC as a special people's vehicle to represent young people and ensure the voices of young people are reflected in the decisions of the Commonwealth. That vision still guides us, and now more than ever. At a time where uncertainties continue to grow, we have to collectively discuss a unified approach to addressing the continually evolving needs of youth, which is why your presence here is critical. Therefore, over the next 5 days, let us make pledges and develop concrete structures. Let us agree that when we next meet, we will not debate whether to act, but to report on what we have delivered. As we have shown, even with the limited resources that you've given us, you can trust us to maximize every single bit of support that you give to the CYC. And I quote from our former president, the first president of the Republic of Ghana, "The task ahead is great indeed, and heavy is the responsibility. And yet, it is a noble and glorious challenge, a challenge which calls for the courage to dream, the courage to believe, the courage to dare, the courage to do, the courage to envision, the courage to fight, the courage to work, the courage to achieve the highest excellences and the fullest greatness of man. Then we ask for more in life. Vindu can mark the moment when words turned into deeds. And so let us leave these walls with signed resolutions and dedicated resources to drive youth development. Let us finally realize the promise of the CYC as envisioned in 2013. The future of young people across the Commonwealth depends on our bold actions today. We have no option but to act, and no other time to act but now." Thank you.
The Commonwealth Youth Council consultative dialogue is very imperative and crucial, as it is facilitated and specifically designed by and for the youth across the Commonwealth 56 member states. It helps youth participants engage directly with policymakers and leaders to share their lived experiences, their perspectives and solutions, as well as contribute to shaping youth-centered policies at the national and Commonwealth levels. Apart from that, it also informed the priorities of the Commonwealth Youth Council, also known as CYC, and other youth-focused institutions. The dialogue also empowers youth to lead initiatives at local, regional, and global levels. It provides training and mentoring opportunities, as well as promote youth as agents of change in governance, innovation, and sustainable development. It helps youth participants to collaborate with peers from diverse backgrounds, as you heard from Jonathan Ope, who was speaking now. He's from Ghana. So it helps youth to collaborate with peers from diverse backgrounds to co-create responses to shared challenges like unemployment, digital exclusion, and climate change, as well as exchange ideas, innovations, and success stories to replicate them across all borders. Other than that, also it elevates issues that matter most to them on the Commonwealth agenda and ensure their voices influence decisions on global challenges from climate action to digital inclusion. Also, Equal helps youth that are not passive participants, pardon me, to attain positions of equal stakeholders in development and also get partnership in building inclusive societies. The summit is still ongoing. And of course, it started yesterday, which was Monday, and it's ongoing up until the 8th of August right here in the capital city of Windhoek. If you are a youth and that is interested in also being impacted with the knowledge that is taking place there, then make sure that you do attend as well, so that when there is dialogues, perhaps leadership dialogues that require youth participation or require youth advice, or you will know exactly what you're referring to. You will know from what standpoint you're talking from. And you can also have the boldness knowing that other youth are doing the same and participating and making sure that youth are involved in policy making and decision makings. With that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Now, remember, our studio line is very much open for you to also partake and air your contributions. Perhaps also ask questions right here on the Radar Analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impact? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Ipuranenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni mando tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili unehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okupitida oipingi konu konda doi inawa minuto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka opone ushengi fenawa nokumona oijawiri nawa ninge fata fana Monica ko Eagle FM onore sa timwe bali heavy nola natu heavy bali no heavy ile ko berewa bra heta tu natu bali o heta tu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM bi ai.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On The Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, moving on with our analysis, the Institute for Public Policy Research, IPPR, on Tuesday launched the third installment in a series of reports examining the sectoral damage caused by corruption in Namibia's fishing industry. The latest analysis focuses on the Government Employment Readiness Program, also known as GARP, which was established to assist fishermen who lost their jobs in 2015, as well as those affected by the fallout from the fish rot scandal. Launched in 2020, the Government Employment Readiness Program, GRAP, aimed to mitigate the socio-economic impact of widespread dismissals within the sector following the corruption revelations. Now, senior researcher Frederico Links outlined the program's outcomes so far, evaluating the extent to which GRAP has achieved its intended goals. Let's take a listen.
This is from this is the third in a series of papers we've done around, you know, sort of the impact, the human rights impact of the fish rot, fisheries corruption on, especially the fishermen, former fishermen and fisheries workers, and the fishing community in general, and looking specifically at, impacts on individuals and labor and that sort of thing. So this is the third, and it follows on from the other two, which were both human rights impact assessments. And in these assessments, in these papers which are available on the IPPR website, the issue of the government's employment redress program kept coming up. In the interviews and in the survey we did for the second report, the issue of and the feelings around the government employment redress program were fairly strong from the interviews and the survey that we did. So we decided to take, with this report, to take a look at what it is that is happening under the government employment redress program. And that is why we've done this report. Now, I have to apologize, the report isn't quite ready yet. It will be ready this week, and it will be up on the IPPR website. We will notify everybody of that once the report is up on the website. So please be on the lookout for that. There's just some things I still have to tweak in the report before we finalize it. But we'll notify you, and it will be soon. So this is taking a look at, with this report, we just want to take an overview look at, you know, this is government employment redress program. It's 5 years now. 5 years now since this specific intervention was introduced or emerged. And just taking a look at what has happened under this scheme. So the government employment redress program is an initiative that emerged from cabinet back in 2020, a cabinet decision of 23 June 2020, Cabinet resolved that the Ministries of Fisheries and Marine Resources and Labour, Industrial Relations and Employment Creation to find a way to secure full-time permanent employment of specified former NAMSOF retrenched employees and those who lost their employment due to their participation in the legal strike back in 2015. Now this is language we've taken from that appears in contracts that has been signed between the ministries and various designated companies, fishing companies, that statement they impose to secure full-time permanent employment, which is an issue of contention of the government employment redress program. As we'll see as we go further into this presentation. But this is the language that is in some of the contracts that we've seen between government and the designated fishing company. So almost immediately after the cabinet took this decision, a month later, the designated companies and the agreements for the appointment of fishermen, the whole scheme was gazetted, in Government Gazette number 74. So that's where all of this started, with this cabinet decision back 5 years ago, almost exactly 5 years ago, in June 2020. And you have to bear in mind that this was shortly after, 6 months after the exposure of the fisheries corruption. And then the fallout from that, where we saw some many companies in Namibia, fishing companies in Namibia collapse, and the company closed its doors. And all of those fishermen from the Icelandic company, they've also been coming unemployed at that stage. So all of this, there was pressure on the state to intervene in some way, and that's where this cabinet decision, I think, comes from. The impetus for this decision, this intervention, back in 2020. I'm trying to find out, you know, if there is something similar anywhere else in the world. But CAP seems to be a unique government or state-led scheme in that it is using a natural resource, in this case, the fisheries resource of Mongolia.
Let's now hear from Rorens Ihuhwa, who is a distraught fisherman.
So we can use this out here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lawrence Ihuhwa. I'm the Secretary General of the Logistics Union, representing the majority of companies that employed the workers under the press book. I think what is of critical importance is what emanates from the report. I will call it a position paper. I think my colleague, Mr. Kawet, has touched already on the issues or shortcomings within the program itself. But it's also good to see Mr. Seth here on behalf of government, the implementers of this GET program. Yeah, it was a good initiative from government to have this program, but I think that what I will touch on what emanates from the report a little bit, and I think I pick up good recommendations out of that report. And amongst others that let's touch on was the issue of workers are aging, they are retiring, they are getting old. Now I've seen companies where workers are being put on retirement because of the policy that limits their age to 60. Now, what do we have? Do we have a retirement benefit out of this redress program? Nothing. What we want to see is that the quota that is allocated is to benefit these employees. Now, why can't we say that let's have a long-term benefit for these employees to get paid even after retirement, as long as the quota is still being allocated to these employees? That's number one. That is now in relation to job and income security. The other thing I want to touch on is the issue of the interpretation of the employment contracts. Full-time permanent employment. I think government had the intention was good for businesses to create full-time employment. But the conflicting part is where the quotas are ending or being renewed. What happens when the quotas are being renewed? Are we saying that these people are being retrenched? Remember that employees at the end of the system, some of them are migrating because of the salary disparities in salaries to various companies. And that is because of the whole issues within this program. And government calling that entities are poaching employers because one might propose better benefits and so forth. But what we need to interrogate is that why is it that if entities, some of them are given equivalent quota salaries or a gross margin, where does this disparity in salaries come from? The answer that we did that, we did some investigation, is that let's take a company like Uganda, see, do they have the capacity? Yes, they have the capacity. Infrastructure, they have. As opposed to this new company like the Yarrow Women, they are new, they don't have the capacity, so their operational cost is more than Uganda, which is already in existence. So that's why, although both of them might have this species of an egg or a smack. So that is where these problems are emerging from, where you find workers migrating from after this end of the season, from this entity to this entity. But government is failing to investigate the root cause of these issues. Currently, as we are speaking, we see two companies, for example, that insolvent, whether they become bankrupt. Now, the minister class wrote a letter at the end of the session informing the companies that, listen, we are relocating these employees to different countries. Now, as prior to the expiry of the quotas and so on, and we ask that are in interest, because we did not receive ways of being employed on a full-time basis. What happened to the outstanding salaries and so on? Nothing happened. And the only remedy that we have as a trade union movement is to resort to the Office of Labor Commissioner. But the question to be asked is, who are you going to cite as a respondent, first respondent? Government is the custodian of this quota. Then you have the companies as employers. But even if you want to negotiate for better benefit improvements with government, I mean with the employers, they will tell you, listen, go to government and ask them to increase the quota for us to give what you want. So meaning that the framework that we want to see here is what we pick up in the report. It's very interesting. I will call it a provisional report because you have mentioned that there's still outstanding data for them to complete the report. Like the last thing before I conclude is the issue of Mr. Ohana mentioned that they want direct allocation of quotas to the beneficiaries, yes, the workers themselves. Now, the companies have created something called a trust fund, if I'm correct, where they are giving a certain percentage of their investing. I don't know where they're investing, but nobody knows how this fund is growing, who are the trustees on this fund, because the trust fund obviously should have a representative of those that are beneficiaries and so on. And how they are sharing these dividends, nobody knows. And what the report is saying also is direct transmission to cooperatives run by workers, that is what we propose. And also the issue of strict disaggregation and compliance agreements. That should be also to make sure that indeed where these entities are complying. But I can tell you now that government must be commercialized these quotas. To say that we don't want to use it, just forget, let's commercialize it. What will happen now? Then it means that these workers will go and work under conditions established by companies already that are in place. So, the issue of quotas, accountability, is of critical importance because it's a public, it's resources that we must account for, because we know that workers are compensated fairly. But what happens to the most shareholders? Obviously, the entities, but how do we account for these quotas? The final option is that I want a straight union movement. We must set up a tripartite board that consists of government, trade union, and then the employers. For us, it's body, like what we have in the security construction industries. When we negotiate, at least we have a body that represents all stakeholders. And always, the money must be transparent to the civil society. Give them information, because I see in the report, I don't see anything or shortcomings that are probably raised by the government or employers, the entities. It focuses more on the interviews that we've conducted with the workers. But I wanted to see what says on the side of government. But in conclusion, it's a very constructive information.
The Government Employment Red Race Program, which was initially intended to restore employment and dignity to affected fishermen, has been marked by ongoing concerns and questions about its effectiveness. And I will pause here and take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly to continue right here on the Reader Analysis.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager. wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who knows does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you to News Beyond the Borders. But before we do that, let's get right into what's making headlines today in terms of economic indicators. Now, we're starting off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. One US dollar today will get you 18 Namibian dollars and 5 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 83 cents. 1 Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 60 cents. 1 pound sterling will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 97 cents, while 1 Chinese yuan equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 51 cents. 1 Botswana pula equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 33 cents. And now for economic indicators. Copper futures in the US were at 4.4 US dollars per pound, retesting the lowest since April and holding the record-setting plunge from all-time high of 5.9 US dollars from late July. That is after President Trump excluded refined copper from being tariffed. Now, the tariffs will apply to imports of semi-finished copper products in wires and pipes, but will refrain from taxing ore, cathodes, and concentrates, among the most widely forms of copper imported to the U.S. Now, the slump was the unwind of traders allocating metal into the U.S. before the end of July to undercut threats of 50% tariffs on copper, which included refined products and led to shortages of metal in foreign exchange. The Central Bank of Armenia held its benchmark interest rate steady at 6.75% during its August 2025 meeting. The deposit and lending rates were also left unchanged at 5.25% and 8.25% respectively. The decision followed a slowdown in the country's annual headline inflation, which eased to 3.9% in June from 4.3% in May. The top commodity gainers under agricultural commodities are palm oil at 1.72%, rubber at 1.03%, and coffee at 0.53%. The biggest losers in this category of agricultural commodities are corn at minus 0.77% and wheat at minus 0.57%. Meanwhile, the top commodity gainers are steel rebar under metal commodities for today at 1.13%, with the biggest losers being platinum at minus 1.02%, copper coming in at minus 0.55%, and gold at minus 0.06%. The HCOB front services PMI fell to 48.5 in July 2025 from 49.6 in June, revised down from the initial estimate of 49.7. Now, this marked the fastest contraction in services activity since April and extended the sector's decline to 11 consecutive months. Output and new orders fell at a quicker pace, mainly due to weak domestic demand as clients delayed decisions amid political uncertainty. Export business, however, showed slight growth. Employment declined again, with firms citing the non-renewal of temporary contracts and the decision not to replace voluntary leavers due to subdued workloads. Backlogs of work continued to fall as firms focused on clearing existing orders. On prices, input cost inflation remained modest, driven by rising wages and material costs. As a result, prices charged rose only slightly, constrained by strong competition. Looking ahead, business confidence deteriorated sharply after a rebound in June, with optimism falling to its lowest level since mid-2021. And that's what we had for you today in terms of trading economics and economic indicators. For now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We also invite you to partake in the news analysis on 083-288-401. When I do come back, I shall be bringing you news beyond the borders. So stay tuned right here on the radar analysis.
Lipurani ngeno wapo wa Eva tere uliko ni mando tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili unehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuwana kono ngeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu honda doili nawa minuto otukupitira o special ngezashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa ninge Pada Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora is a team, Bali Hairi, Nola Natu, Hairi Bali, no hair, Ineco, Berewa, Murahetatu Natu, Bali or Hetatu Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Welcome back, and now we take you to news beyond the borders of Namibia. We start off regionally, then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. Now, starting off in South Africa in regards to the Johannesburg Stock Exchange.
Johannesburg Stock Exchange's 2025 half-year financial results have been released, showing double-digit growth. Despite global challenges, the net profit after tax has been recorded at 13.2%, with strong revenue growth across core business lines. The JSE has made significant strides in technological modernization and continues to solidify its position as a dynamic and future-fit exchange. Well, joining me now is Leila Faree, Group CEO of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Juliet. Thank you.
What key factors drove the JSE's 13.2% NPAT growth despite global challenges?
Juliet, we've seen a very significant shift in trading on the exchange since the establishment of the Government of National Unity. If we compare all the companies listed on the JSE to how the rest of emerging markets are doing, the JSE is up by 18% for the year to date. Other emerging markets are only up by about 15%. And we also had a historic and record achievement 10 days ago where the all-share index hit 100,000 points, which is a very important vote of confidence. Investors are starting to acknowledge the value of companies listed on the JSE, and many of our companies have increased in their share price. The JSE itself has increased by more than 40% since last year, just post the GNU.
How has the diversification of revenue streams contributed to the JSE's resilience?
Juliet, we have delivered continuously very good results, notwithstanding turbulent business and political cycles that we're experiencing from abroad. And we've done that through effectively and successfully driving non-trading revenue. Non-trading revenue now contributes to more than a third of our overall trading. And so this shields us from the severe ups and downs that tend to naturally come with market dynamics. We're very pleased with the investments that we've made in technology, and these two are starting to contribute towards our non-trading revenue.
Now, with equity trading revenue up significantly, what specific market conditions or strategies drove this growth?
We have a number of elements that contribute to the growth in the equity markets. Firstly, the most important element is business confidence, and we have seen an improvement in business confidence since the establishment of the Government of National Unity. And what is particularly pleasing is that business confidence and the activity appears to be sustaining. Our average trade values are up per day by 26% for the period. And even in July, we saw almost 30% increase in the value traded on the bourse. And we are starting to see the investment in technology, the development of new products, new innovative products, and also the improvement in the broader macroeconomy and the positioning of South Africa in the global confidence level. There are also many investors internationally who are rotating the investments out of the US and into emerging markets. And South Africa is screening well, and we are well positioned in comparison to other emerging market investment opportunities.
Meanwhile, four suspects have been shot dead in a shootout with police in Randfontein, South Africa.
The exact circumstances of the incident are still unknown at this stage. However, according to police, the suspects were believed to be on their way to commit an armed robbery before they were intercepted. Now, for more on this, we cross to Lopang Alamu. She's at the scene this very moment. Good afternoon, Lopang. Just share with us what exactly is happening there at this hour.
I'm going to rob a business person who was going to bank some money. And then they linked with us, we tasked and deployed our technical response team, TRT, Ama Barrett. We also then tasked our anti-gang unit to intercept them so that no crime is committed. And just on the road here, when the police tried to stop them, it's unfortunate you can't get closer to the car. They started shooting at the police. You can see rifle cartridges there. You can see pistol cartridges even at the back seat from inside. And the police had no choice but to defend themselves. And at the end, four of them, suspects, are lying there. They are gone for good deed because they were taking chances. And what is quite interesting, inside it's full of muti. They put a lot of muti on the seats and on the petrol cover tank. They say prayer is the key. Now, we don't know which one worked for them because both clashed because they were doing something which either the mutri didn't work or even the prayers were prayers for the police to succeed, to intercept and eliminate what they want to do on the road.
General, could you confirm if they are part of a bigger syndicate?
For now, investigation is still on, but what I want to highlight also is that on the vehicle, we found the number plate that is placed on the vehicles. It's a false number plate. The correct number plates, we managed to find them in the boot. We managed to recover also a rifle with a lot of magazines. We managed to cover two pistols. For now, we don't know whether there's more arms or any other thing in the vehicles. But it is a criminal group. Obviously, if the information came from our crime intelligence in the Eastern Cape, now we can't rule out that they operate everywhere they think it's good and soft for them. But there is no soft space for criminals in this country.
Briefing on the suspects who were fatally shot today by police, our reporter there, Lopang Alamo, is on the scene. Lopang, good afternoon yet again. The police had that impromptu media briefing just to give context on the incident. What do they say exactly happened?
Mfunda, very good afternoon to our viewers. Not such a good day for these particular suspects. I'm not too sure how far you can see behind me. We've seen some of the suspects haven't been taken yet by the forensic authorities who I think are still making their way here. I'm going to move out of shot and just start talking to Major General Fred Kekana from the South African Police Service. Just talk to us about what happened here. What we do understand is that the group was intercepted on their way to commit a robbery. Thank you so much, General, for your time. If you could just talk us through what happened here this afternoon.
Thanks very much, Lopang. What happened, the police were following up information. Our crime intelligence from the Eastern Cape liaised with us, and we tasked our tactical response team, our TRT, well known as Ama Berete, with our Gauteng anti-gang unit and Fidelity Security Company. We collaborated and made sure that we intercept this team or this group before they can even commit a crime. And when the police tried to stop them just here, that's where they then decided, we cannot be stopped by you, police. We are on our mission. We are in charge. We want to do what we want to do. And they started first with the police. The guy who was seated in the with the rifle started. There is rifle cartridges from their own vehicle. There is pistol cartridges inside the car, and the police had no any other option but to defend themselves and the property, and hence four suspects are lying dead today.
General, we've seen.
South Africa remains hopeful for the 30% tariff reconsideration.
Of Trade, Industry and Competition's Deputy Director General Xolelwa Mlumbi Peter says that they remain hopeful in their talks with the United States to reconsider the 30% tariff on imports from South Africa. Ministers Park Stau and Ronald Lamola for the DTIC and Department of International Relations respectively say that projections are that 30,000 jobs are likely to be affected by Washington's decision that will come into effect later this week. The DTIC has announced a raft of support measures for impacted industries to try and counter the possible jobs bloodbath.
We remain hopeful. Of course, it's really a complex environment, and I think not only for South Africa, but for all the United States trading partners. But what is important is to continue to engage. At least what is important for us and is an important factor in terms of the South Africa-US dynamics. We are the US's biggest trading partner in the continent. biggest investor in the U.S. from the continent, and therefore we do have complementarities that require continued engagements to find each other. And there are U.S. companies that are based in South Africa and vice versa, South African companies that are based in the U.S. So it's going to be important that both countries look at the interests of those companies and the workers with a view to find common ground. We do acknowledge that the 30% will have an impact on jobs and will have an impact on manufacturing capacity. The important issue for us is to continue to engage the U.S. with a view to finalize a deal that will assist to move us forward. So we are continuing to engage with the U.S. and reach out to the U.S., but also engaging the affected sectors. And government is currently looking at, as announced by the ministers, a package of measures that can assist the private sector to withstand the tariffs. Mm. We've also established an export support desk so that the affected industries and companies can reach out to the DTIC to look at where the alternative markets are.
Meanwhile, the government of Zambia is working diligently to reshape the economy.
Members to interact with government officials visiting Lavushmanda district. Welcomed with cheers and jubilation, the officials shared warm words with the community, highlighting the government's key achievements. Special Assistant to the President for Politics, Levin Goma, used the community engagement as an opportunity to reassure residents of government's continued commitment to meaningful development.
Government is undertaking efforts to adaptation and industries. This economic transformation is anticipated to foster broader development, particularly in social sectors,
such as education.
Meanwhile, Mines Minister Paul Kabuswe encouraged the community to turn out in large numbers on August 7 and vote for the UPND candidate Malama Mufunelo, emphasizing that this would help bring enhanced development to the area.
Supporting UPND candidate Malama Mufunelo means choosing a direct channel to the development. He will serve as a crucial bridge between the people of Mfuwe and President Hakainde Hichilema, working to ensure government programs and resources reach the constituents.
Emuchinga Province Minister echoed similar sentiments, reinforcing the government's dedication to delivering progress.
This is your moment to choose a leader who will deliver meaningful development. Make your vote count. Vote wisely by choosing Mufunelo.
Those who had previously expressed interest in the Mfuwe seat under the UPND banner also threw their support behind Mr. Mfunelo, demonstrating party unity.
I stand before you today to encourage your support for UPND candidate. With your vote, we have an opportunity to tackle the pressing challenges our community still faces.
Botswana is set to host the 21st annual general meeting of the Regional Universities Forum for Capacity Building in Agriculture, scheduled to take place from the 1st to the 5th of December in Gaborone.
Our farmers are not relics. They are frontline defenders in this climate struggle. They deserve our highest support technologically, financially, and politically. As we confront the climate crisis, we must also embrace the opportunities it presents. Let us reimagine agriculture as a powerful tool for climate resilience, inclusive development, regional integration, resilient food systems, and transformation.
Opportunity to unite in this effort. Our farmers are not just
are stewards of the land and guardians of our shared future. Let's walk together into a future where climate adaptation is not a burden, but a catalyst for innovation, sovereignty, equity, and shared prosperity. Let me close by appreciating my heartfelt gratitude for the donations that I just received here a short while ago. The seeds that come from the Zambian farmer are an example, an indication, an enactment of the message of adaptation, of climate resilience. We acknowledge that Zambia is now an exporter of seed to many countries in the region. This is a result of the energy, the ingenuity, the commitment, and the hard work of the Zambian farmer.
Zimbabwe banned sale of second-hand clothes and nighttime vending in major towns.
Authorities in Zimbabwe have banned the sale of second-hand clothes in all central business districts of all municipalities. The ban also includes a restriction of all night vendings effective Monday. While speaking to the journalists on Monday, the Minister of Local Government and Public Works, Daniel Garre, said that the government had also banned the importation of second-hand clothes. He further directed the city of Harare to collaborate with law enforcement to immediately implement the new measures, emphasizing that street vending undermines formal businesses that pay taxes. He noted that night vending had also led to illicit drug and substance deals, posing threats to health, the economy, and the national security.
Let me do this.
Somaria is working to improve exclusive breastfeeding rates.
As Somalia joins the rest of the world in marking World Breastfeeding Week, it continues to report one of the lowest exclusive breastfeeding rates in the region, just 34% for infants under 6 months. At one of Mogadishu's largest mother and child hospitals, a breastfeeding awareness center serves around 150 women each month. Many of them are from the displaced communities. Here, mothers receive information to help prevent infant illness linked to poor breastfeeding practices.
Health officials say that lack of breastfeeding can lead to around a dozen complications for newborns. That's why I've made sure my baby doesn't miss this important process. This awareness campaigns really help us understand its value.
The theme for this year's World Breastfeeding Week, Create Sustainable Support Systems, helps shine a light on the many challenges that breastfeeding mothers face. They range from misinformation and lack of support to systematic barriers like inadequate maternity leave, poor workplace accommodation, and aggressive marketing of baby milk formula. For Somali working mothers, breastfeeding support at the workplace makes a huge difference.
We focus heavily on awareness, but now we must also create breastfeeding friendly spaces, not only at home, but also at work. We need proper facilities and stronger infrastructure. As frontline workers, we often hear mothers say, "Why do you push breastfeeding when your own children are at home?"
Another growing concern is the widespread marketing of what companies brand as breast milk substitutes. Authorities say Somalia is now moving to enforce the International Code of Marketing of the Blist Milk Substitutes to protect mothers from being misled.
Blist Milk Substitutes Code.
We will fully implement the Breast Milk Substitutes Code. I have instructed all health centers to stop using or promoting these products. These measures can help reduce child mortality, although we also recognize the economic pressures many families face.
Organizations like UNICEF have pledged support for initiatives aimed at increasing exclusive breastfeeding in Somalia.
Now, specifically for UNICEF, we'll continue to support the ministry in close collaboration with all partners to provide evidence, to build capacity, to support the change of policy. We have highlighted few policies, especially the policy on the workplace. It's very important. And also to ensure that every actors who are contributing understand why it's important. Investing on breastfeeding, save life, but also build the future of the country.
As more Somali mothers learn about key role exclusive breastfeeding plays in the growth of their children, the need for workplace-friendly infrastructure to support them, particularly in conservative communities, continues to grow. Mohamed Kahi, CGTN, Mogadishu, Somalia.
The 97th Agricultural and Commercial Show in Lusaka spotlights innovations in climate resilience.
Over in Zambia, the final day of the Agriculture and Commercial Show is underway in the capital, Lusaka. The three-day event has attracted over 1,300 international and local enterprises, including more than 100 Chinese companies. This year's theme is Adapting to Climate Change, and on display were achievements in manufacturing, green energy, agricultural technology, and other fields. President Hakainde Hichilema and visiting Botswana President Duma Boko attended the opening ceremony and jointly presented an award to the China Pavilion in recognition of its contributions to the event. Zambian officials say the show provides an important platform for agricultural and commercial exchanges.
We have seen industry investing, big company investing. We are talking about mining companies which are here. We are talking about seed companies which are here. We are talking about Chinese companies which are here looking at a different aspect. So it has really evolved and is really trying to develop and promote not only business, but as well as also socio-economic status of Zambia.
Uganda's young football players inspired as country co-host Chan.
It's just a regular afternoon training session, but this year the mood feels different. With Chan coming to Uganda, every run, every shot carries new weight and renewed ambition.
Obviously, it's very inspirational for me. So I see players from here, like Alan Okello, local best players here in Uganda and all over Africa play. So it's a very great experience here, and I'm ready to see and learn a lot from it.
For these young players, Chan is more than just a tournament. It's proof that dreams born on fields like this can lead to something bigger.
To me, it's a very great opportunity because I'll get a chance to see other outside country players, whereby, and also Chan is promoting local players, whereby I dream of being one of them in next generation.
Playing with my colleagues, it is so interesting because when I look at them, they also have a dream like me. They're also chasing their dream, so they're always serious when they come in the pit. They also give me that challenge. So I believe if I keep on working with them, if we keep on pushing as a team, one day we are going to achieve our dream.
Many of these players know that Chan has been a launchpad for others before them. Players who also started out in grassroots football just like this. You can feel the energy right here on this dusty pitch where raw talent meets big dreams. For these young players, Chan isn't just a tournament on TV. It's something they now picture themselves a part of. And with Uganda hosting, there's real motivation out here that one day, one of them could wear the national jersey. Their coach, Juma Sechizivu, says the tournament is already reshaping how his players see the game and themselves. But challenges off the pitch remain. Many promising players are from poor backgrounds and cannot afford access to formal football academies.
Good players come from poor families, so they can't afford to go to those academies, like the, as you see Proline. Very many academies that are good, but they are very expensive to join. So if a player is talented, is poor, he cannot join that. So the challenges we get here when they grow up, we take a lot of time to teach them football because they haven't passed through those drills.
Chan will unite teams from across the continent, all made up of players discovered in their local leagues. And while these university hopefuls won't be on the pitch this year, their focus remains on the future. Because if Chan can come home, maybe one day, some of these players will achieve their goal of competing at a higher level. Michael Balekesi, GTN, Kampala.
BP vows to do better for investors as profit tops forecast.
BP's second quarter profit easily beat expectations on Tuesday. The energy major also said it would take action to do better for its shareholders. Measures include reviewing its portfolio of assets and considering more cost cuts. CEO Murray Auchincloss has been under pressure to improve profitability. Earlier this year, he announced plans to sell $20 billion of assets through to 2027, as well as to cut spending, debts and costs. He signalled Tuesday further action might follow, without giving details. BP already has a target to cut costs by $4 to $5 billion from 2023 levels. The oil giant posted Q2 underlying replacement cost profit, or adjusted net income, of $2.4 billion on Tuesday. That was down from $2.8 billion last year, but easily beat analyst forecasts. The quarterly performance benefited from a 33% increase in profit at BP's customers and products business. It was driven by strong oil trading results, higher volumes, and a 20% rise in earnings at its Castrol lubricants unit. BP shares were up around 2% in early trade.
Hugo Boss sees a relatively low exposure to US cushions tariff hit.
Hugo Boss beat quarterly profit expectations on Tuesday despite warnings of weak global demand. Investors liked what they heard and shares flew up 7% in early trade before scaling back. The luxury fashion brand further said it would only be slightly affected by Washington's tariffs, as it has lower exposure to the US than many rivals. Hugo Boss did warn of persistently weak consumer sentiment globally and that demand in China was subdued, but it still confirmed its outlook for the year. Hugo Boss reported a 15% rise in earnings before interest and taxes to $93.5 million in the April-June quarter. That was ahead of forecasts and helped by cost-cutting measures as a stronger euro weighed on sales. The group warned consumer sentiment was still relatively weak in North America, although demand in the US had improved in the second quarter from the first 3 months of the year. When converted into euros, Hugo Boss revenue fell 1% to just over $1.1 billion in the second quarter. That was roughly in line with market forecasts.
Pessimism about UK economy has been overdone.
The Bank of England is expected to cut rates this week, but why does Britain still have such stubborn inflation? A rate cut in the UK this week is considered baked in by the markets, but they expect disagreement among policymakers who are divided over how much price pressures are easing. Inflation rose to 3.6% in June. That's the highest since January 2024, and some economists think it will soon hit 4%. Danny Stoilover is UK and Europe economist at BNP Paribas. Danny, the Bank of England is facing quite a challenge, isn't it? Why does Britain continue to have such high inflation?
The Bank of England is definitely facing an array of challenges. And at the end of the day, monetary policy is a question about risk management. How do you manage the trade-offs between still sticky price pressures and relatively subdued growth? While we do agree that a rate cut is all but a done deal on Thursday, we really think that until the supply side weakness in the economy is handled, which is not something that the BOE has full control over, that inflationary pressures will still be sticky. So we think this is something that will keep the Bank of England on this gradual and careful approach to easing until they have more evidence in one direction or another.
Do you expect then that the slowing labour market and slowing growth will bring inflation down and give the bank a stronger case for more cuts towards the end of the year?
The slowing that we've seen in the labour market so far is almost a necessary prerequisite for these domestically generated inflationary pressures to come down. And given what we've seen, we do think that this opens the door for the BOE to continue its easing cycle, but we're not convinced yet that the Bank of England should accelerate the pace of easing. And that's because the dynamics that we're seeing right now in this slowing in labor demand really tell us that it's more of a recalibration in response to the policy measures that were implemented in April and a normalization to the trends that we were seeing pre-pandemic, rather than a sign that labor demand is completely falling apart in the UK.
We expect to see the members of the Monetary Policy Committee having quite divergent opinions, don't we?
We definitely do. And this again goes back to what I mentioned before about how different policymakers view the challenges ahead. We ultimately think that the MPC will vote 7-2 to deliver the 25 basis point rate cut, with 7 members voting for this 25 basis point reduction. But we expect to see 2 voters dissent on the dovish end and vote for a larger 50 basis point rate cut on the back of their well-flagged concerns about the UK labour market and this risk management approach to monetary policy.
You said you don't expect the bank to speed up its pace of cuts, but how much are you expecting over the next year?
We definitely think that there are still a few more cuts in the pipeline for the Bank of England. We have a long-held view here at BNP Paribas that the BOE would ease until it reaches a terminal rate of 3.5% in the first quarter of 2026. Through these quarterly rate cuts in line with this gradual and careful approach that they've outlined so far. And the reason behind that is we think that the BOE will ultimately have to keep rates mildly restrictive into the medium term to completely stamp out these inflationary pressures that are being driven by the supply side weakness.
What's the bigger risk, that they cut too quickly or not quickly enough?
I think right now, in our view at least, the bigger risk here is that potentially the BOE cuts too quickly rather than not quickly enough, especially because we're seeing some signs of life and consumer spending. Finally, we're seeing labor market surveys point to potentially more positive outcomes on that front in the year ahead. So there's not clear signals that the economy is falling apart. And I think some pessimism on the UK economy lately has been a little bit overdone. So for right now, I think the Bank of England's focus should remain staunchly on inflation and getting inflation back to target. And I think that's ultimately where they will land.
That's Danny Stoilova of BNP Paribas. Don't forget, you can watch more videos on Reuters.com.
And now we've come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengi program brought to you by Louis Shimi. Don't forget the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut kicks off at 16:30. Thereafter, Business Economics segment with David Chombe at 1600 hours. Now from Inda Afa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. Make sure you do grab your copy of the Villager e-paper. If you haven't read yesterday's one, make sure that you do read it as you anticipate for Wednesday's edition of the e-paper. Now from me, Inda Afa Happy Juju again, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Great news! Import just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Import? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Inba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Inba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Ipuranenge no wapungwa eva tere ngikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili nehola mo iho tike kovano ile koshuan. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebi toda njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nuneuto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamweli nawa. Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onmora isatimwe bali heavy nola natu. Heari bari no heari ileko berewa mura hetatu natu bari o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Either a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economy news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM has a dedicated team.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Either a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omotiha, utekiru wakaguna, ii matina omjo. Shikao shafasana nana, nongeshifa, yae, shiwike moshiwana. Ie moyao, ota ingongo tisamwene. Anangeshifa, ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandisoma yoe, yongeshifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oni aji. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer.